C1S. Number 4A.
Now, I want to start with the chapter Science, Theology, and Medicine. This chapter is within the framework of the Matrix, the Christ as the Christ. And therefore, we will find here the depth of the Christ translation, a very important standpoint in which we will sense, I would say, the scientific sense of the Christ in its mission of translating itself to the human. This chapter, which includes those three parts of science, theology, and medicine, is depicting, as what Mrs. Eddy says, means of divine thought, which include spiritual laws emanating from the invisible and infinite power and grace. So these three parts will give us the means of divine thought, as she says, which include spiritual laws. We will notice through this chapter that now she gives an emphasis, so to say, on science, that her revelation is not just a wonderful inspiration, but that it is a revelation which reveals science, laws, definite laws. So that this revelation does not only rely on inspiration, intuition, illumination, but that it is based on finding behind that revelation a scientific meaning. And she says, which includes spiritual laws emanating from. Here at once, the standpoint of the Christ from God, emanating from the invisible and infinite power and grace. So it isn't something which she has been thinking out. It's therefore not something which has a human origin or a learned origin or a scholarly origin or any origin in any philosophy, be it the Platonic or the Spencerian or any other philosophy. Its origin is the infinite power and grace. Whenever we hear the standpoint of God from God, we know it is the Christ standpoint, because Mrs. Eddy defines the Christ as the true idea voicing God, the divine message from God to men, speaking to the human consciousness. Now that's what is shown in this chapter. This Christ idea voicing God, a divine message from God to men, and speaking to the human consciousness. Let us first take the first biblical note, and I follow now the epitomes which have been distributed and which gives a short survey of what we are doing today. The first scriptural note. What it seems to give here is interpretation from revelation. The text reads, "But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man." You hear at once that it is not after man. It's not from scholarly learning, not from people, not from any book. For I neither received it of men, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ. That was Paul's experience. Paul's experience that he could see that what was revealed to him, though he was a learned man, was not coming through the channel of his knowledge of the Bible, but direct from the Christ idea. It was a revelation from God. Also Jesus, as we hear in the same chapter here, said, "My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me." I just want to give these references just to impress constantly that revelation is always from God direct. For Peter, when Jesus asked him, "But whom say ye that I am?" answered, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And then Jesus said, "Well, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven." Jesus not even said that he, Jesus, revealed it to Peter. He could even see that even in that inspirational atmosphere that Peter got it direct from the Father, direct from God. Well, this is an indication for us where we have to look for revelation. Mrs. Eddy said, "No human pen nor tongue taught me the science contained in this book, Science and Health." Nothing could teach her. No pen, no book, nobody, no man could teach her the science contained in her book. She got it direct from God. God dictated it, so to say, to her. So that her textbook and the revelation she got in 1866 was an inspiration direct from God. So whenever we try to see from where revelation should come from, we should be more aware that revelation fundamentally, primarily, is coming always direct from God. Truth, he says, is a revelation. It isn't something which we can learn. Truth is always something that comes direct from God to man, because the Christ is the idea of God. The Christ isn't the idea of somebody or of a philosophy or of a book or of anything, but it's the idea of God. As Mrs. Eddy said of her revelation, "Ear has not heard, nor hath lips spoken the pure language of spirit." Human theories are inadequate to interpret the divine principle. Truth is a revelation. When we see that we have gained quite a lot, because we know that there are various schools of thought in the world, say, for instance, the Jews, the Pharisees, and so on, the scribes, they thought that revelation and insight into the nature of God would come from a text, from studying a text very closely, so that not one dot should be added nor taken away. It's the rigid, cold sense of things. Others feel that revelation comes through the medium of meditation. Like the Eastern philosophy, like many of the modern techniques of meditation, that's the school of the mysticism, of the mystics. There are other schools which feel that revelation anyway only comes to a very few chosen ones. Well, to one, perhaps one in a century, one in a thousand years. that it is all right for chosen ones. And there is the school of Christian Science, which shows that revelation comes from God and can be received by anyone through the way of science. You will notice whenever you take your concordances and look up what Mrs. Eddy says about revelation, about reveals, especially the act of revealing, that she says science reveals, divine science reveals, Christian science reveals. It's always science that reveals, nothing else. So we can make here an enormous step forward, namely to see that each one of us has the right to have immediate, direct revelation from God if his mind is cultured in the science of mind, in the science of Christian Science. And we'll see that as we go along. This is naturally quite a different proposition than to say that only a few chosen ones can receive revelation. And you know how people long for revelation. And that's natural, because truly and inwardly, man is revelation. Man is the state of revelation. He is the revelation of God himself. So there it's natural that man has in himself that longing for new revelation. And in order to have more revelation, more insight into the divine being, Christian Science shows us the way, the method, to have more, or to be more receptive for this direct revelation. It's all a matter of being receptive to conceive of what God is telling anyway, anytime, to anyone, to us. Then let's take the second scriptural note. We'll come back to these questions again and again, because it's a main subject. From where do we get revelation, and how do we get revelation? The second scriptural note has a sense now of translation. See, the first one was really how Paul said that he could get his revelation direct. And so what he was preaching as the gospel was the interpretation of his revelation. He had a revelation, then we know that he withdrew for many years, first to Arabia, then to Tarsus, and only after many, many years of being quiet and thinking this revelation over, he preached the gospel. He interpreted what he got as a revelation. That's how it is with us too. Sometimes something just springs into our consciousness which is new, but which we can't yet really define. And then it needs our peace, our study, and our consecration, and then slowly and slowly that which has come as life begins to be definite. We can begin to define it and classify it and order it and build it into the whole system of Christian Science. The second scriptural note has much more the sense of translation. It says, the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. The kingdom of heaven. Well, you know the definition of kingdom of heaven in the glossary, and you can look it up afterwards again. It gives us that sense that of the reign of harmony in divine signs. The reign of harmony in divine signs. The realm of unerring, eternal, and omnipotent mind. then comes spirit, the atmosphere of spirit, then comes soul, where soul is supreme. So this kingdom of heaven, really a state which we long to have, the reign of harmony in divine science, is like unto a leaven, like unto leaven. Leaven, you know, like, oh, you say yeast? Yeast, yeah. Like yeast is really that which changes the chemical properties of meal. It changes the chemical properties of meal. And this leaven is of that nature. Yeast doesn't add anything or take away anything. It leaves the same substance there, but it changes and changes and changes until the properties of meal are completely changed. See, therefore, this process is not a process of adding or taking away or doing anything. It does it by itself. And though it seems that the substance is the same, without adding something, taking away something, it changes and changes and changes until it is completely changed. Well, that's really what the Christ translation will do, that the Christ translation is not going to take anything which is true of the nature of true substance away, nor is it going to add any true substance, but it takes that which is, whatever it is, even if it's evil, and takes it and changes the properties, the inherent nature of it, so that afterwards something quite new, quite different, appears. In the positive sense, this kingdom of heaven is shown as a leaven, and Mrs. Eddy defines it as the signs of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. So this leaven which a woman took, the leaven which we take, is the signs of Christ and its spiritual interpretation. If we take, therefore, in our consciousness the signs of Christ and begin to realize what these signs of Christ is, what its constituents are, how the order of the Christ works, if we take in the science of the Christ and its spiritual interpretation, then that very acceptance, and that's the woman is that which accepts and conceives, the very acceptance and conception of the signs of Christ and its spiritual interpretation is that leaven in human consciousness which changes the properties, which changes all the elements of the human consciousness until something very different is going to be manifested. She also calls it the leaven of truth or the leaven of spirit. I point this out in order to show that the leaven is always something absolute. It's the signs of Christ in spiritual interpretation. It's either truth or it's spirit. You see, it's a synonymous term for God. So that we begin to realize that the woman who takes this, who accepts this leaven, who conceives of this leaven, is not doing anything but to conceive it, to take it, to accept it, to adopt it, to receive it, to admit it to oneself. And then the leaven works by itself. There is nothing else to be added to this process of conception. And so we will see how this the changing of everything that needs to be changed must be done by the leaven of truth itself. In the negative, this leaven also works, as Mrs. Eddy defines it, as human doctrines, or as the leaven of the Pharisees or the Sadducees. You see, she gives both interpretation of the leaven and shows how so often, naturally, that when we are a false woman and accept and conceive of human doctrines, of human point of views, of a false sense of things, that also works like 11 and also begins to change us, but in a very ugly way, in a negative way. This leaven is hid. It's hid. It's hidden. It is not something which is apparent to the senses. And Mrs. Eddy says that the second appearing of the Christ truth is always hidden, and therefore is not coming to the front as a apparent manifestation, but is constantly hid in the three measures of meal. And so we have to perceive it through our spiritual sense, that it is there, though it does not outwardly always appear. It's quite interesting that the Bible says that this woman hid it in three measures of meal. Three meaning these three measures of science, theology, and medicine. It's fundamentally those three sectors of human consciousness which covers every field of human life, that all the various sectors of human life can more or less be reduced to these three. So it has a symbolic meaning. Now the new translation, which has been done by the New English Bible, says that it was hidden in half a hundred weight of flour. And you can see how an intelligent translation takes away all the spiritual significance out of the Bible. No one of us knows what three measures of meal is in the way of weight. We only know what it means in this way of spiritual weight, of spiritual meaning. But when one translates the Bible from an uninspirational standpoint, it takes out of the Bible the main meaning. These two biblical notes have a sequence. And the sequence is most important for us. Namely, it shows that everything starts with true revelation. And that if we can see the true revelation and interpret it aright, that is really the reign of harmony in divine science. That is really the kingdom of heaven. And that kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven that leavens the whole lump. Therefore, our revelation, whatever higher revelation we get, is in itself that which leavens human consciousness. It shows, therefore, the true translation from God to man. That translation is not something where we first have a revelation and then where we think, let's take that revelation and apply it to the human. It shows that it changes by itself, that it is hidden and changes by itself, that every new revelation, every new insight into the divine being is already translating itself in human consciousness, that which must be translated. And we get the automatic operative power of the Christ. That we see the Christ translates itself from God to man and changes the human consciousness. But it isn't so that we have to take a new revelation and then try to translate it into some situation. It is not so that we feel that Christian science is all right, what we study and so on, but that it also should be translated into the human situation. The Christ translates itself. It's the leaven that works hidden, that works by itself and changes what needs to be changed. We'll see that clear and clear as we go on, that all that there is necessary is to have that wonderful woman sense which takes those three, which takes that leaven, which receives it, accepts it, and conceives the idea. Then we go on to the first paragraph, which I tried to summarize in my epitomes as discovery through revelation. She says, in the year 1866, I discovered the Christ science. Or, therefore she defines what she means by Christ science, or divine laws of life, truth, and love, and named my discovery Christian science. Up to this point. I said yesterday that this chapter has been written for the first time in the 50th edition in 1891. And when she wrote this sentence there, it did run a bit different. She said, in the year 1866, I discovered the science of metaphysical healing and named it Christian science. She didn't say at that time that what she discovered was the Christ science. At that point, it was only the science of metaphysical healing. She hadn't lifted it up high enough, really, to see that it is more than just metaphysical healing, that it is a science that is much bigger than just applicable for healing. Then, later on, in 1902, she said this very sentence, in the year 1866, I discovered the Christ science or divine laws of life and named it Christian science. She just got it to the point of seeing that what she discovered was being, life. And only later on, in 1907, she put it the way we have it now. So you see, in her thought, was growing constantly something that we perceive now today, that what she is showing us, that actually she discovered Christian science as that Christ science, which is the divine law of life, truth, and love. Naturally, this absolute standpoint can be translated, the Christ always does translate it, can be translated to the point of Christian science, and then it is applicable as metaphysical healing. That's what she says right afterwards. That she says, God had been graciously preparing me during many years for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. You see, what we will perceive here is what you know the difference between the standpoint of absolute Christian science, which is always symbolized through synonymous terms of life, truth, and love. And then she shows how this absolute standpoint of Christian science, of the laws of life, truth, and love, are being translated to the point or to the level of Christian science. Christian science is science applied to humanity, and therefore it appears as the science of metaphysical healing, the principle of mental healing.